Welcome everyone to ILoveRealEstate.tv podcast. What are we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to talk about a change in the industry. And I think this is a very important topic to be talking about as we speak, because the lending industry is under attack. You know, we are having a terrorist attack on our borrowing industry right now. So let's talk about that. What's actually going on? And in order to do that, we probably need to go back a little bit and start to understand what happened with the changes in the borrowing and financing industry back a couple of years ago. Now, to help me out with that, I've got two of my esteemed colleagues here. I have Clint and I have Brendan.
Thank you.
From Investor Loans Network. Now, talk to me, guys. What happened? We've got this regulatory body called APRA. Now, APRA regulates the banks. From what I understand, the Sydney market and the Melbourne market were going crazy. The powers that be says, oh my goodness, we're getting too unaffordable in these cities. We need to peel things back. They think the rest of the country is responding the same, which it isn't. So they bring in these laws that affects the whole country, and the only real big stick that they could wield was one on the banks.
Yeah, very true. So I think it sort of stemmed back in sort of around 2015, obviously when the market was starting to get very buoyant in these sort of capital cities. And for the first time, investor lending actually outstripped owner-occupied lending. And that was the first time on record. So that's a first red flag, I suppose, for APRA to look at this and to go, well, obviously investors are getting stronger and stronger, and the unaffordability sort of problem that's there for owner occupiers had started to kick in. So very much that was sort of the starting point. APRA, as the regulator of the banks, and prior to that, I suppose APRA didn't have really a lot to, from policy point of view, the banks really just, They didn't have any weight. They didn't really step in. But here, they first, gave the banks a bit of a warning, to, hey, keep this in check and in control. And I don't think the banks really listened to that initial warning. Mm. And that's when APRA really came down with a big stick. And they first introduced this 10% rule, which is that the banks have to control their investment loan book and that it cannot grow more than 10% year on year, which has been a tough one for the banks to manage. And we're still seeing them make some pretty, ad hoc and knee-jerk reactions around. And obviously Brendan's more at the forefront, from the lending side of things.
Yeah, just recently we've seen some increase in rates again for about the second or third time now, I think. One of the major banks up nearly 0.5% just overnight with no real reason other than these APRA requirements making their cost of funds more expensive.
Which is a bit of a furphy anyway, really. What they're trying to do, I would say, is pull back on the number of people that are actually going through to investor lending because they're getting close to their quotas.
Correct. Yeah, and that particular lender was one that we'd sort of heard that they were getting very, very close, and then all of a sudden, as you say, we start to see these reactions and their delays in assessing applications and in some cases even delaying settlements.
Wow.
So they're all making, policy changes. I saw one lender that had LVR changes within probably a matter of 2 to 3 weeks. They were at 80%. They then went up to 90%, back to 80%, then 70%, and they're at 60%. LVR for investment lending. And that all happened within 2 to 3 weeks. And it's like, well, who's making these decisions on behalf of the bank, and they're trying just to manage this 10% volume?
I heard that the APRA got out their big stick and said to the banks, you will give us an office in your bank and any policy change has to go through us first before we can approve it. I mean, this is getting seriously Big Brother stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get closer and closer to an environment where all the banks have a very similar way of assessing clients' serviceability.
Whatever happened to free trade?
I know.
Democracy and all that stuff, capitalism we're supposed to be living in.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's frustrating for everyone. Our
bloody
investors are feeling.
Bloody nanny state we're in.
Yep. And I think the banks want to do business. We've got low rates. They're across the board very sound banks in global standards, and they're keen, but they're really getting held back.
You know, it's funny. On one side, we've got a budget deficit and, you know, we're trying to bring that back in. The way you bring back a budget deficit is to have growth and good growth in the economy. The way you have growth is to have a fluid lending market so we can have growth, so we can create jobs, so that we can, you know, build things and employ people and all of these things. So the government's going, we need a lower deficit, we need to have more growth, we need to have more growth. And then they go and give all this power to a regulatory body that basically squashes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%.
And it is the more sophisticated investor that's been damaged the most here. You know, the more
they're the
lending,
ones who create the most jobs.
Correct. Absolutely. You know, the more properties, the more lending that you have in place, the tougher it is, the more income that you need to continue to service these loans and to continue to invest, unfortunately.
Yeah, it kind of makes a little bit of a difference for the way you start to run your portfolio, because, like, let's just work through an example. Let's say previously we would have had, you know, a $500,000 loan, and we would be assessed as to whether we could get that loan or not, basically on the interest rate that it was going to be, possibly even interest only at, say, 5% or something like that. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yep.
Am I right?
That's yeah. right.
Whereas now we're going for the same $500,000 loan, and they're going, well, the interest rate at the moment might be 5%, but we're going to assess you on 8%. And if on a P&I basis, paying it off over a short time span.
Yeah, yeah, and often, yeah, like you said, P&I, but P&I over 25 years, not taking into account what you may do at the end of your interest-only term. You've got different options there, but
amazing.
Looking
and it's
at
harder
the
and
case.
Harder to get interest-only.
Correct.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So what's the solution, guys? We've got a think tank around the recorder here. What's the think tank? What's the change that we need to make?
Look, it's a tough one, and these policies is being changed, you know, week in, week out. I suppose the biggest thing is really having an idea of where the banks are sitting in their 10%, you know, cap. So therefore,
how's an average person supposed to know that?
Look, yeah, you're not. As a consumer, you'll never know, you know, and it's really the small tweaks, you know, that we see from a policy changes behind the scenes that give us the indication, you know, where the bank... you know, where the bank's sitting, because at the end of the day, you know, if we're doing business with a bank that has got, you know, a door wide open wanting to do some lending, because
they're obviously below quota.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is that if they are below quota, they don't want to come in at only 8%. You know, we're talking big numbers here. They want to come in at 9.9%, because if they come in low, it means that they do less next year.
Mm.
Okay, so they're really trying to hit this 10% right on the dot, which means that, you know, at times they're opening their doors and saying, hey, we need to quickly get some volume in here. And I'm sure the conversations in the credit floor and the credit team is, you know, if there's no valid reason not to do the deal, let's do the deal with that bank, versus the bank that's saying, God, we're so close to this 10% quota, or we're just over it. So really we need to, you know, if you can find a reason not to do the deal, don't do the deal.
Mm.
And so therefore, if we can be making sure that we're, you know, setting those applications with the banks that have got the most chance of wanting to do the business, and this changes nearly weekly, if not monthly, at least.
Yeah.
So you've got to be dealing with intermediaries like yourselves. You have to.
Correct. If you're just dealing with one bank and one bank manager, it will be luck of the draw around your timing, you know, when you're going to the market, around the timing and where they sit.
Mm. And also the types of properties that the investors are looking at now are more and more important, and they need to use, you know, creative strategies such as potentially, you know, a subdivision and selling of one and keeping of one, and just being a little bit more proactive and using different strategies rather than just a accumulation of a number of properties and holding a high level of debt, because we're just finding that even clients on a very big income, they are still hitting a debt level at some respect if they're not buying the right properties.
Mm. I heard a rumour that one particular bank went over their quota. APRA came in and said, you've got to, you know, you've got to stop this, you've got to pull back, you've got to stop lending basically till you're under quota. And they basically said, yeah, well, get lost. What are you going to do if we don't? And they said they were going to take their licence away.
That's the, you know, they are the regulator. So that's
wow,
their power. And we have seen banks totally pull out of the lending market for a period of time before they've re-entered. And that means that their existing customers can't even go back and do a little top-up. You know, because they are not lending then, you know, for
they
any investment purposes. They're only lending against the owner-occupied side of things. But we're also seeing, you know, major banks here in Australia starting to hit this quota, and they will not go anywhere near, you know, risking their obviously license to trade. But that's what APRA is.
Tell me how this 10% works. Does it work on a yearly anniversary date, like from, you know, the financial year or the calendar year, or does it work on some year that the bank got their license and renewed? Does it work on a monthly moving average? How does it work?
Look, I believe it's a 12-month rolling, you know, rolling type average.
So 12 months to 12 months.
A rolling average.
So reviewed basically weekly or monthly. It's really regular that it's reviewed, and it's on their annual target of that 10%.
So if in August last year a bank had a big month, or the year before, where before all this regulation came in, and they had a really huge month that time, that would mean for them from here on in, if they're going to stick with this ruling, that every August they can have a bumper woohoo time, and then they've got to pull back to whatever it is. Is that how it works?
I think that, you know, the rolling 12 month will obviously spread that out a little bit. So depending on their volumes, you know, month in, month out, you know, it's really just looking back in history. You know, if they're sitting here in March, you know, they'll be looking at what lending they've done over the last 12 months back to the previous March, and whether that, you know, and how that relates back to their existing book.
And that was a big thing too. It was their existing book, because there were some lenders that had much larger investment books to begin with, so they've had a little bit more play than, say, lenders who have had small investment lending books to begin with. Obviously, their cap was a fair bit smaller.
So they can continue to be small.
Correct.
And there's also now this...
That's not fair either. That's not even fair to free trade.
Very, very much a pricing differential between owner-occupied lending and investment lending. And a lot of those banks have gone back through their loan books, and obviously offering, you know, it's a very competitive space in this owner-occupied space. And there's probably a lot of loans that have been sitting on their books that may have been written originally as an investment loan, and they're very happy to, you know, if they are now in an owner-occupied loan, to get them off the investment book and over to the owner-occupied side, because that's going to free up, you know, capacity for them.
I heard a rumour, and I don't know how true it is, that when all this came out and they go, oh my goodness, we've got to get it across to an owner-occupier, not an investment loan, if you owned your own commercial building that you ran your business from, they go, oh no, that's not an investment debt, that's an owner-occupier debt, and they move the commercial loan across to the other side.
I don't know the truth of that, but that's...
Good Lord.
Yeah. We've heard things like that, and we've heard, you know, some banks not being able to sort of separate one from the other, investment and owner-occupied, because of their computer systems. So they've sort of been under all sorts of pressure to report and get data that effectively they had a lot of trouble coming up with. So.
Now, there's some banks at the moment that are in the news with litigation from APRA, and they're now challenging that and going, you know, we weren't in the wrong, and it's going in and out of courts and things. What's your take on that?
Look, you know, there's banking policy continues to tighten up, and I suppose there has been times and arguably, you know, banks not being responsible around some of the lending, you know, and that's where, you know, now the industry...
Do they actually have loans fall over, though? Was that what caused this?
No.
Because I don't think they did.
No, the arrears rate here in Australia, all the banks are AAA, you know, it's very, very low.
It's lower than anywhere else in the world.
Absolutely. It's, and, you know, they're most concerned, obviously, about these, you know, these very strong, you know, property markets, which we have seen, you know, properties, a lot of our clients, you know, their loans off their interest only, you know, continue to come and potentially expire, that we look to increase that interest only period again. And I know one came back this week, and we've got a valuation on record that was 5 years ago. It was a Sydney property, and we had it valued 5 years ago at $1.4 million, and we just had it revalued now, and it valued at $2.9 million. So it's over 100% capital growth in that 5 years. On a higher end type property, we're not talking a cheap property, and that's just the reality of, you know, what the Sydney property market has done in that period of time.
Look, I get the problem, but I don't think this is the answer. I really don't. You know, I guess we're stuck with it, because, I mean, I can whinge all I like, but I'm not going to be able to necessarily change policy. So what does this mean for investors? You know, we want to continue to invest. We want to continue to do more manufactured growth. I mean, I guess the investor that this hurts the most is your traditional uneducated investor who is going out there buying negatively geared investment properties and absolutely getting slammed from a serviceability perspective, because the rents are shadowed and it's negative geared, and they're rating at 8%, you know, for serviceability instead of 5 or whatever they're on. So they're the ones that are really getting hammered. Our students, a little bit different because we're doing a lot of manufactured growth. We're creating things. We're making our property worth more. We are concentrating on positive cash flow, not negative cash flow, and all of these things, which is an advantage. But the more properties you have, it still affects you.
Yeah. Yep. And that's just where, you know, you might do a manufactured growth deal, and in the past you might have tried to, you know, held on to the majority of that deal. These days it might be a case of, you know, having a sell down to pay down debt and holding a smaller component. You know, going
so we go and build a block of six and we sell down 5 and keep one debt-free.
Perfect.
Rather than selling 3 and keeping the others and there's still positive cash flow, because
exactly.
We'd rather have one completely debt-free.
Yeah, or maybe 2 with very low debt, you know, but towards the lower end rather than try to hold on as much as we can, because the reality is holding on to as much of that development as possible may restrict you to get into a new deal, whereas, you know, selling those couple, you're much stronger again than to roll into the next project.
I think another thing to discuss here is it may be beneficial for students to do more manufactured growth deals as a PPR deal, because that puts us in a whole new ballgame.
True.
Yep. Doesn't it?
And the PPR often with a higher level of debt against it is what's holding a lot of people back, because that loan there, when they go sort of extend too much on the PPR and they don't think from an investor's standpoint, they just buy their dream home.
Yeah,
they
dream gear home up too early high, kills you every
correct,
time.
And then they just don't have any capacity left for the investment property. So sometimes maybe putting the investor hat on and adding a subdivision or a dual income to that property can make all the difference.
So doing a PPR deal, which is a manufactured growth deal, and using your home as a stepping stone. Obviously, you've got to be aware of the tax implications there, because you can't be seen to be trading in your PPR, otherwise they're going to charge you income tax on that as opposed to capital gains tax free. But more of that kind of thinking needs to be incorporated, and probably a bit more sell than I'm used to.
Yeah, just that little bit more sell, and you know, obviously we know wealth is in the holdings to try to hold on as much, but it's just if we want to continue on investing, it seems to be that you know, we've got to pay down debt along the way here as well, not just our, you know, home loan debt through, you know, through profits and manufactured growth. If we can actually pay down debt and then be holding property with, you know, nil to low type debt against it, that's where you'll be setting yourself up to be able to go into that next project with, you know, with strength.
I've got a little bit of a concern here, because obviously when you've got an interest-only loan, you have a higher serviceability previously because you've got less of a commitment to pay, therefore you can borrow more for the future. And that's been a general kind of philosophy. These rules kind of affect that dramatically, because the serviceability is not as good as it would have been. I've got a concern. If you're with a bank and you're interest only, and that bank is above quota, and your interest only time comes up, okay, are they actually going to extend? Are they actually going to roll it over either to another interest only or roll it over into a P&I loan? That concerns me.
Yeah, well, now we've actually found that not only that, but a lot of the lenders want to do a full assessment for a investor to roll that over, regardless of, you know, their history with the bank or anything like that. They want to do a full new assessment under their new policy, which obviously was different to...
Whereas previously it was very easy. Most banks, you press the button and roll over for another 5 years, but under the new legislation and responsible lending, they no longer can do that. The loan has to be reassessed, because essentially your principal and interest term is changing. You know, if they're giving you another 5 years interest only and the original term was 30 years, well, now you've only got technically a 20-year, you know, time frame to repay that debt.
So from an action perspective, I would think it would be better for students, if they're on an interest only, before that interest only comes up, and a good time before it, like 12 months before or something, to go to the bank and say, I want to change that to a P&I. Because in my experience, most of them are happy just to switch it across to P&I. You're not at the end of your term. They're not looking to have it assessed. And if we can switch it across to a P&I before it actually comes up, it'll probably circumvent some of those problems.
Sure. Most loans have an interest-only period in their loan, as well as a P&I type repayment. So they will just automatically, you know, turn over to the principal interest.
Some will. Some won't. Well, some you're going to have canned. You know, they're going to do assessments, say, oh, you don't fit under the new criteria. You know, you've got to sell the property or refinance somewhere else. And, you know, if you're not in a position to be able to do that, you can get yourself into all sorts of trouble here.
Yeah,
particularly in commercial, you'll see a lot of that. But, yeah, it's definitely worthwhile being on the front foot and having a review.
I think it's time for students to start thinking about their interest-only stuff and converting it across to P&I, even though it goes against what I've said previously. With these new changes, I'm actually happier with that of being P&I.
Mm-hmm.
I really am. I can just see a problem looming. It may not have hit the stage yet, but I really feel it could do.
And now your servicing is better if you've got existing debt at P&I now. It actually is better for your servicing now than a five-year interest-only term because it's
we're
going to
get this
repayment.
Message out. We really do. I hope everybody that's listening, make sure you tell all your mates, get them on this webinar, get them on the podcast, I mean, listen to it, and take heed because this is really serious and it could have a major impact.
Yeah. I think the take-home here is that, and I know as a business, this is probably the toughest lending environment we've ever seen, but we're still doing record amounts of lending. Okay, so we're still getting lots of lending across the line, but it's just taking
that's
a lot more
different.
Planning. It's a lot more different, and from the consumer's point of view, it's you know you need to also have a level of education and understanding of it more so than ever before. Mm. And there's people out there that may or not have got a loan the last 1 or 2 years, and prior to that were thrown money at. Be careful. Don't commit yourself. Don't go out and buy something at auctions just thinking that I've never had any trouble, you know, getting lending, because this is a very, very different market. So it's really important to have an intermediary, as you said, Dipna, you know, a finance strategist on your side, and make sure that you're educated yourself, but also then got an advisor that's working with you to maximise your position.
See, this is something where it really sought the chaff from the hay with advisors as well, because, you know, your regular broker out there that goes, this is what you did, who's not used to dealing with complex situations or investor mindset and all of the educational stuff that we go through, you know, they are going to give wrong advice for starters, and they're going to get people in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, a bank manager that's really only advising on behalf of their employer.
That one bank.
That's, and their bank managers are renowned to, you know, make it all sound rosy, you know, to begin with, until the 11th hour and they say no. They promise the world because they want the business. They're a salesperson. They're wanting the business, so they'll promise you all of the world, looks all fine, yes, give me this, you know, I can't see any issues, until they say no, you know. Mm-hmm. And really that bank manager isn't the one making the decision anyway.
No.
It's someone up in a high-rise building somewhere that doesn't have any, you know, one-on-one.
It's controlled by numbers. Yeah, they're controlled by the computer as to whether you're above or below quota, and, you know, and that changes weekly.
Yep. It does. So, you know, the lenders that we're using today are very different to the lenders that we were using 6 months ago, you know, to the lenders that we're using, you know, 12 or 24 months ago. So it's constantly changing. You know, there is different options, whether we're, you know, looking at deals that can involve construction or deals that don't have a construction component. We're also seeing now, you know, initially the APRA changes really just affected the residential investor. But we're now seeing that those APRA changes are flowing onto, you know, the small time and the property developers as well. So that property development funding
is drying up
very quickly and drying up time.
Particularly with the banks, and it's just important that they have a talk to an expert first and maybe factor in a slightly higher cost of funds for these types of projects now, because they can still get done, but it may not be at the typical low major bank rate.
Yeah, or with a major bank, you know, there's a, you know, now. And these sort of environments, you know, provide opportunity. You know, provide opportunity for other, you know, players in the market, whether it's private funding, you know, peer-to-peer lending, you know, all these sort of things are starting to say, okay,
crowdfunding.
Well, correct. Especially in a low interest rate environment that, you know, to have money sitting in the bank on a term deposit, they're not getting much money for that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they, so these sort of, this peer-to-peer lending is starting to, you know, to be sort of the major, you know, contributor to a lot of the development funding these days rather than the actual banking sector.
Mm. Certainly changing times. So what does it take to get a banking licence? Can I get a banking licence? What do I need?
To be licensed with APRA?
Yeah.
What do you got to have?
No, I don't, probably don't. But what are the rules? I don't know, you know?
Why can't
we have some wealthy billionaires from, I don't know, China or something come in here and set up a bank?
Yeah.
Give us some bloody competition back in the industry.
True. And there's different, you know, different banks are regulated, you know, by APRA, you know, which are the Australian Deposit Taking Institution. So any of the institutions that can have term deposits and bank accounts, etc., you know, which are the majority of banks. But we've also got these non-ADIs or non-Australian Deposit Taking Institutions. They're the old sort of more securitized type lender, and they're not as restricted as the banks around policy. The problem is, you know, it's all volume here as well. Is you know, when a massive amount of volume goes to a very small part of the sector, they can't handle that either. You know, so they've also had to adapt and change policy to restrict the amount of volume that they're receiving coming through to their doors. So it's a really tough one. It's a hard market, and I don't see it getting any better, you know, in the short term, unfortunately, because
the government departments have to work out that this is not working. It's not stemming, the pricing for starters. It's not stemming the investor market. It's putting major risk, I feel, into economic growth, potentially our AAA rating with that as well, because if our economic growth goes down, our deficit goes up, you know, our AAA rating's out the door. You know, it's affecting our currency. You know, it's stupid. It's absolutely stupid.
And it's affecting the housing. You know, obviously construction. You know,
jobs, everything.
Yeah, it has a massive flow on effect.
Jeez, it makes me annoyed. So cranky. Okay. Well, that's a good enough chat, I guess. Guys, I hope it's helped. There's a few gems in there about what you should be doing. There's no, you know, magic wand or anything like that, but it's certainly stuff you need to know. I mean, informed is forewarned. So if you've got the interest-only stuff out there, really consider taking it back to P&I. More of a sell-down strategy than perhaps previously, you know, looked at, with lower debt servicing, lower debt levels.
Mm-hmm. And just also,
and PPR deals.
Yeah, and keep your personal position as lean as possible, I suppose. So credit card limits, car loans, anything that just would normally maybe make that difference, you know, or maybe not make that difference, is making a difference at the moment. So all those things can all add up and help as well.
Mm.
And your existing portfolio, it's really important to, you know, to assess those existing properties that you might have owned for quite some time, because they are taking up your borrowing capacity. So it's like a return on borrowing capacity. You only have so much. Mm. So where is your borrowing best put, and obviously something that is active and some, you know, something that you can manufacture the growth and control that, you know, can be a lot better than, you know, some of those older properties that are sitting around. And
if it's just another property not really doing a lot for you, you might be better off. You might be better off without it.
Mm. Particularly sometimes in Sydney, these people have seen excellent growth, and there's a lot of equity tied up in there that could get put to work,
which they may not be able to access unless they do actually sell it.
Correct.
Mm. Okay, guys, that's it from us. Thank you very much, Clint. Thank you very much, Brendan. Great to have you on the call. It's a very tough topic today, but I hope that's been of interest to you guys. Talk to you again soon, and I will be back again to talk to you on another completely different topic on the next podcast. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye for now.